Ah, good morning and happy Friday, and well, not just any Friday, but it is the Friday of a bank holiday weekend. And well, that's only good news. The sun is shining, which is a great start, I have to say. Now, coming up today, whatever about farming, how do we cut transport emissions by 75% in just a few years? The Laois ladies look ahead to an All-Ireland final. And we give you a taste of Laois as I go searching for my newspapers. Where have I put my newspapers? I'll find them in a moment. 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103, powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. And you get me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. That, by the way, was the not-so-subtle cue to Cameron Clark that I had managed to leave all my notes outside. That's a fantastic start to a bank holiday weekend. Well done, Will. Anyway, what have we got for you? Well, the front pages are mainly discussing the deal on climate change between Fianna Fáil, the Green Party. The three leaders locked themselves in a room for a few days and tussled about different percentages. And they really haven't decided how we're going to achieve many of these targets, but the targets are set nonetheless. The one that has attracted most commentary is a 25% reduction in emissions from the agriculture sector. What could be even more problematic if you're living in a rural area is reducing transport emissions by 75%, because if you're in many rural parts of the Midlands, you simply do not have a local transport option other than the car. And therefore, what are you meant to do? Remote work completely? That's not for everybody. Are you to cycle everywhere? Obviously, I'm being facetious. So how do we cut emissions by 75% in transport unless everybody buys an electric car practically? And then what about haulage? Anyway, we'll try and drill into some of the possibilities a little bit later. The next story, families who are just average in a bog standard house will face annual energy bills of €4,700 per year. Just let that soak in. €4,700 a year, according to bonkers.ie, by the time we get to winter and all of the increases have been passed on and there are more to come, that's how much the average household will be paying. And he predicts the next round of increases will add €400 a year to gas and electricity bills. He tells the Irish Times that Electric Ireland, Airtricity, Bord Gáis and Energia will be following from the recent increases announced by Flowgas and Panda. More to come, unfortunately. Is there good news? Can we find maybe a little bit of good news in the papers? Yes. Romance fraudsters have been caught. Now, who are romance fraudsters? So these guys were living in County Meath. I am unable to pronounce their names, quite frankly. Two gentlemen in their 30s and an accomplice who lived in Dublin. He was 32. And these three individuals, who are not originally from Ireland, befriended a woman who was 66 years of age, and when I say befriended, became romantically involved with her. They knew she had a good job because her online profile told them everything they needed to know. And they managed to extract from her €282,000 after setting themselves up on the Plenty of Fish dating website under the name Neil Turner. None of them, by the way, their name is not even remotely like Neil Turner. As I said, I can't pronounce them. But the story is in the Irish Times, and the reason I say it is good news is because they were caught. They were brought before the courts, and we will watch them for the next 2.5 years in prison. So at least that will protect some other women, because this case was not the only one Corvey suspect they are involved in. Now, Spain has decided to invite you to the beach. And it doesn't matter whether you have a beach body, whether you are plus size, whether you have had a mastectomy, whether you have a mutant physique. All bodies are beach bodies. So says the left-wing government, which has launched an advertising campaign encouraging women to go topless. And the reason this has made news is because many in Spain are offended by it, because they never in the past had any difficulty or qualms about going to the beach and going topless. And they feel it's a little condescending. One person has tweeted, "You are right up there with Nelson Mandela for your efforts for humanity." Thank you, Irene Montero, has been trending in Spain. Irene Montero is the minister who brought this in. And another person told the minister that they were sick of her neuroses. Anyway, sometimes when you're trying to be very, very politically correct and progressive, it can backfire on you. Have you thought about quitting your job? Because in the present jobs market, people are in high demand, bosses are trying to retain staff, and you might have an opportunity to ask for a raise. But there's a piece in the Irish Times today, a study saying 8 out of 10 people who accept the carrot, who take the extra money, the counteroffer from the boss, end up leaving within 6 months anyway. Because if you're job hunting, you're applying for other work, the chances are it's not all about money. And therefore, if you're only placated with cash, it's probably not going to satisfy you in the long term. You need to talk about promotion or extra responsibility, maybe longer holidays, some other perk beyond brass tacks. That seems to be the advice from the researchers. 8 out of 10 leave after 6 months, even with a pay rise. Personal injury claims are down by a lot. And let's watch and wait and see, does this filter into your insurance renewal? The Personal Injuries Assessment Board says claims fell by almost a quarter last year and are down 43% since 2019. And if insurers are therefore paying out fewer claims and smaller amounts, well, you should see the benefit in your car insurance, hopefully in business insurance and in any other insurance you may need to take out, possibly house insurance being an exception on that because the claims don't tend to be of a personal injury nature. So pick up the Irish Times, read about it, and then tell me, are you seeing it? Or have they yet to pass on a 43% reduction? I dare say it's probably 5%, 10%, something meagre like that. Ridiculously low is a headline on thejournal.ie today. What are they referring to? What's ridiculously low? Just 33 electric vehicle charge points have been approved around the country. And only 3 county councils applied to install them under a new government scheme. Here we are only 5 minutes ago talking about having to reduce transport emissions by 75% in only the next 7 years. And the very county councils who will have to promote it couldn't be bothered to sign up to install electric car chargers. If you're curious, the 3 who did, Louth County Council, Dublin City Council, Tipperary County Council. Are you there, Laois County Council, Offaly County Council, Westmeath County Council? Why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you put them in? Anyway, and a final one, and a piece of good news, and this is something I'm delighted to bring to you this morning. If you were listening yesterday, you would have heard Lorraine Fitzgerald appeal for information about her missing sister. And Andrea, at that stage, had been missing for well over a week from Nerney in County Kildare and had possibly been seen in Port Arlington. And as a result of the interview, the search found its way back to port, and we're told at around 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon, Andrea was located safe and well. And we often talk about very sad outcomes in cases of missing people. So I just wanted you to know that this has ended well. And with thanks to a lot of very cooperative listeners in Port Arlington who got involved, mobilised and made this possible. So thank you, a huge thank you. Well, not just from me, but from all of Andrea's family as well. How's the mood today as we approach the bank holiday weekend? Because apparently we are enjoying our best summer in years. A new study says 7 out of 10 find life after lockdown to be even better than it was before. I think that's because you get an appreciation for things you took for granted before. For instance, 7 out of 10 people are planning a foreign holiday this year. 4 out of 10 will be going to a festival. Both were things you just couldn't even dream of for 2 years. And, well, you don't know what you have until it's gone, do you? Eamon Ryan is probably going to be on dartboards in every pub in the Midlands by the time this is over. Well, that's if these text messages are anything to go by. Will, use the car and then use the bike like Eamon Ryan. The bike for very short trips. Yeah, sometimes for optics, Eamon Ryan can show up on a bike and, well, he's probably made the journey substantially by car. Will, I would love to know, this is from Mrs. M, by the way. Good morning, Mrs. M. I would love to know if the government and the ESB as a semi-state is really serious about making a difference. Because if they are, why don't they give us the option of small domestic wind turbine or solar panels? Because years ago you would see small windmills by some homes. And if we had one, it would make a huge difference to our bills. But I'm being cynical, because all they seem to be invested in is adding taxes, getting the ESB bill up as much as possible. So mad, says Mrs. M. Or Electric Ireland, as it is now, yes. There is going to be a micro-generation tariff. So if you invest in solar panels, you can get what they call a feed-in charge, and you will get paid for electricity that you contribute to the grid, any excess that you don't burn off yourself. But we're waiting, and we don't yet know what the tariff will be. So you can't work out, are you going to get a decent return on investment yet or not? And as far as I know, that's really only going to concern solar panels. We haven't looked at micro wind turbines in nearly the same level of detail as other countries. And there's a trick missed there. You're right. But again, the challenge is you need the upfront cash. If you don't have that, well, you can't reap the benefits. It's a bit of a trap, isn't it? And the final one from James in Port Leash. He says, well, it is amazing. What is it about Eamon Ryan, Pippa Hackett and the Green Party that they are able to exercise such sway over the government? Why can't they be removed before they put us into a deeper hole out of which we will never escape in rural Ireland? So it's numbers. Basic arithmetic. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael together do not have a majority. They need the Green Party to carry the vote. And maybe it is a case of the tail wagging the dog. But I'll let you make up your mind on that. And if you disagree with the messages you've heard so far, please, 083 30 10 103, text and WhatsApp. I'd love to hear from you. But let's move on to a different complaint. And I want you to meet Derek Conlon from Athlone. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning, Will.
Tell us about your experience in Portiuncula Hospital.
Right, so basically I went to work feeling unwell on Thursday the 14th of July, which my doctor thought I had a chest infection. So I rang them back on the Thursday and I said, go over to Portiuncula Hospital to get a checkup. Hmm. So basically I came in, got my checkup done, and stayed overnight. I thought I'd be here just for a couple of days, just to get on a machine, to get an inhaler or something like that.
Mm-hmm. I don't like the sound of this, where this is going. Okay, what happened?
I'm actually here since. So I actually drove over myself, and I parked up at €2 for the first couple of hours. And now they're actually charging me €9 a day, which is actually €8 for parking, and a €1 convenience parking fee on top of that as well. So at the moment, I'm after paying well in excess of €130.
Yeah, because you're there more than 2 weeks.
And yes, that's correct.
In fairness, if you're hospitalised, it's not like you can walk outside and park it down the road somewhere. And
exactly.
Is there a patient's rate you can avail of?
Right. I was asking the staff here, one of the nurses, which she's very nice. Her name is Maria, and she helped me out a lot. She said, Derek, as far as we know, there is a discount for people who are patients.
Hmm.
So I paid the €9 for the Saturday and the Sunday. And I rang up APCOA, who is the company that's involved, and asked them, I actually told them that I'm an actual inpatient in Bannister Hospital, and I gave them the car park number, which is 1121. So they were able to check it up and said, no. As far as they're concerned, my car is parked in their car park, and I'm being charged €9 a day. And there is no discounts for patients. The HSE pay for the staff. But no matter who you are, you actually have to pay. So I went on the social media just to ask certain people, you know, if they came across the same problem. And they actually did, and they find it a disgrace. Now, my niece was actually here the other day, and she sent me a photograph on social media that the meter where she was parked was €6 for the week.
And where was she parked?
She was parked in Port Youngla as well.
But just in a different section of the car park?
In a different section. So she was saying, and myself and my friends were saying that, so what they're doing is, where you park in Port Youngla Hospital, they'll charge you for that area.
Yeah, I've seen that before as well. I recall in Port Leash when my wife was pregnant, if you were in a certain section basically the closer you were to the door, the more expensive it would become. And
well, it's the other way around here.
What?
I'm actually parked where the A&E is, about 20 yards away at the administration building, and it's free parking 3 yards away for 4 cars, and when I'm parked it's €9 a day. And so I was telling the nurses this, and they were giving out. So they said, do you know what you do, Derek? Ring admin downstairs and see, could they help you in any way? So I ran admin, and they said, well, if you ring APCOA back again, go to the website and get their number and ring them back again and tell them that the administration thinks that there is a discount for patients.
Hmm.
So I actually got a number off the APCOA website. I Googled parking in Port Youngla Hospital, and I came across a different number than I rang, not the 0818 number, and I actually got through to Ballinasloe Hospital. So they have Port Youngla Hospital's name for parking on their website.
Mm.
So the girl I was actually talking to, she said, we don't care, you just have to pay the €9 and get it over and done with. See, I'm in here and I'm not feeling well. So I'm actually on a waiting list to go to Galway for a small operation. But in the meantime, my car is downstairs, and if I don't pay it, I'm going to be clamped. And they said it's going to be €150 for the clamping fee.
Right. And so you'll have the release fee, and you'll have whatever charges are accumulated. Well, so this is going to become expensive very quickly.
Very expensive. And I think she said something about if the car is there clamped for more than 2 or 3 days, it's taken away. So that's another fee on top of that.
Well, like, that's a pressure and a worry you don't need. You mentioned your niece parked nearby, and while I agree with the principle of what you're saying here, should you maybe ask her to move it to a cheaper spot for you for that €6 a week?
The nurse says don't move it. Stick to your principles, which is right. Now, they've actually got together and they've come up with some sort of plan that Maria, Lisa, and I think her name was Ellen, three nurses came together and they said, Derek, your parking is paid now for the next 2 weeks.
They've done it themselves. They've out of their own pockets or they've done a whip around or somehow they've come up with the money.
Yeah, I don't know if they've done a whip around or what way they've done it.
Bless them.
But one of the nurses came up to me and said, Derek, your parking is paid now for the next couple of weeks. So if you're transferred to Galway tomorrow and you're kept there for the week, you come back, your car is still going to be here and it won't be clamped. You'll be able to come back in here, finish your day or two recovery, and then you can head home.
There are good people in the world.
There are. I don't know why they've done it. Possibly because I'm here 2 weeks. I'm one of the longest in here at the moment. And I'm actually in lockdown because I was in a different ward and one of the patients came in with COVID-19.
Right.
So I think I'm finished that today or tomorrow. And I can actually go for a little bit of a walk. But
look, Derek, here's what we're going to do. We're going to contact the HSE because ultimately it's a HSE-run hospital. And you've highlighted something that, you know, not everybody has family around them who can come in and out and move cars and do all this kind
move
of stuff.
Move cars. And I there was one person that was actually down the A&E. He got the bus over. He said, I am not going to pay them. The way he said it, it's €8 parking, but it's a €1 tax for convenience of parking.
Yeah.
Even if you're here for an hour, they charge you a convenience parking fee of 50 cents, something like that. So it's just an extra tariff on top of a tariff.
And not everybody knows, and it's impossible to know walking in how long you may be, because you expected you were going to be leaving after an hour or two, and here you are more than 2 weeks later, and you're still in hospital. And I don't mean to pry, Derek, but is everything okay?
I will know later on today or tomorrow, but I'm hopeful that I'll be out early next week.
Well, I wish you the best on that, because
there is no beds in Galway at the moment. It's just they're inundated with people coming over. So what I actually done today, getting back to the parking, I checked in that loan. APCOA in that loan are actually charged €3 all day parking in Golden Island, even though there's no meters in Golden Island in that loan. And it's the same at some laundry place. Tullamore Regional Hospital, which is a very large hospital as well, have a rate of €5 a day. So if you think of it, as 400 car park spaces here in Ballinasloe, they're actually taking in €320,400 a year just on parking fees alone.
Well, what I don't know is who sets the rate and whether APCOA is just the administrator on behalf of presumably the HSE, and who actually decides the price, I don't know.
The HSE used to run the car park here in Port Iuncla. You'd come in and the barrier would go up, and as you go out, you pay a €2 fee, and all those €2 used to go to charity. And when I rang up the admin here, I said, no, we don't own the car park anymore. It's belonged to APCOA, which is government run. So it's more money into their pockets, as you were talking about Eamon Ryan earlier on, with figures and figures. So the figures that I think myself, that €1 fee is an extra tax going back to the government. I could be wrong.
Well, look, in effect, car parks have always been a revenue raiser for hospitals. As you say, some may be treated as charity in the past, but these days it's part of the business, unfortunately. But
it's
look,
part of the business,
Let's just control what we can. We will ask the HSE why there isn't an allowance for patients, especially somebody who comes in your circumstances is in ill health and has to unfortunately face surgery. And I wish you the best with that. But there should be some, presumably, leniency or grace in exceptional circumstances. Derek, you've a lot on your plate. Thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome, Will. Thank you very much and have a great day.
And you, Derek Conlon from Athlone. Let's see what you're saying, Will. I am sick of listening to all parties about emissions and cutbacks, and yet none of them point to aeroplanes and to the effect of aviation. That's from Philomena. Will, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael haven't the guts to rein in the Greens because they know that if there is an election now, they are snookered. Most will find it hard to be re-elected on their performances and merits. It's pure cowardice, says Brian in Athlone. And Duncan says, the Greens want more severe cuts and it will decimate rural Ireland. For every bovine culled here, Brazil will increase production by 25%. Vegetarians say plant-based meats are the answer, but factories will still have to process it, he says. The Greens want more electric cars, but where does the power to recharge come from? Fossil fuel. Germany is held up as an example to us all, and yet their electricity comes from fossil fuel-fired power stations. Irish farmers cannot offset by planting trees. The Greens don't want it. It's not permitted. It won't work. And yet Germany can. Why? Brazil will be the provider in the world by 2030. And all the Greens can spout is, it's just us taking. Yet no dialogue to the rest of the world forcing major changes worldwide. You can lead by example, but please do it universally, not unilaterally. That's from Duncan in Shinrone. And we'll continue those comments in a few minutes. But let's focus not on farming. That'll come after 10 and how possibly Irish agriculture might reach this target of a 25% reduction. But how is transport going to be reduced in emissions by 75% over just 7 years when we drive what is principally a fleet of diesel and petrol cars? Nearly all trucks and buses are diesel. That's going to be a heck of a change in a very short space of time. Seamus Boland is the chief executive of Irish Rural Link, which is based in Moat. Good morning, Seamus.
Good morning, Len. How are you?
Very well. And I know we talked to one of your researchers not so long ago about the availability of public transport in rural Ireland. That would be, again, quite a long lead-in to develop a sufficient bus network or possibly restore old railways. How do you see this panning out between now and 2030?
I think that there's a massive challenge with the idea of achieving 50% emissions, you know, target from transport, in a especially in the rural setting, will be challenging to say the least. I think there's lots of little things they're going to have to do very quickly. One of them would be to take away that limit of 4 kilometres for school children getting to the bus. If you're below that, you don't get the free transport. So that means all parents, you know, parents who might think of getting rid of a second car can't because they need the second car. And there's a whole lot of things like in totally transforming the bus services in terms of bringing kids to school. But we also need to transform the whole rural transport. The electrification process needs to be transformed. So we're talking about massive challenges because otherwise, the more brute ways of doing it, and one of them you heard during the week about getting rid of the second car, which is totally impossible, we will start ending up trying to limit people or else taxing the second car out of business, which would be also terrible. So I think there's some serious planning to be done in rural transport, especially if we're to achieve these targets.
Well, one story in the Irish Examiner today about charge points, a government scheme open to local authorities, and only 3 county councils applied and only 30-something chargers are going to be installed under it in a country of however many, I presume, well more than 1 million cars on the road. So public bodies, they don't appear to be in unison on this, but that's probably not unusual, is it?
No, I'm afraid this is a real problem. I mean, you know, we were at a climate change summit organised by Eamon Ryan earlier this week, and we were told that this is as large an emergency as COVID. In other words, the planet, as we've seen some examples this year and this summer, is in serious trouble. And, you know, we are way behind and we have to do all of this. And yet, you know, I talked to you before about, you know, retrofitting houses. There are very few local authority houses retrofitted, and yet that's in the government's power to do that. In the same way as electric charges. I mean, the reality is, it's still the motoring correspondents and all the motoring experts are still saying buying an electric car in rural areas, especially to do any kind of driving, is risky because of the charging problem. And we also need fast chargers, so it's not even enough to just put in the old slow 8-hour chargers. You actually need fast ones. So all of that infrastructure will, you know, you need a very urgent task force or whatever it takes to put those in place. And if the local authorities are not doing it, then somebody would want to do it very quickly, because we're talking about choice. And motorists, especially in rural areas, need choice. And it's all very well to preach to us all what we should do, but if we don't have the choice, then we get very, very frustrated because we can't actually achieve the requests being asked of us.
So the test will be whether the money follows. And it's something we all have to, I suppose, prepare for. That'll have to be raised in taxation and through other means. So if you had the budget to, let's say, set up a proper rural transport network, how would you do it?
Well, first of all, it should be, you know, passenger or customer led. We've all, in Irish Rural Link, we've continually said that the problem about establishing rural transport based on the old grid system of point A, B, C for bus collection doesn't work in rural areas because of the network of roads, because of all of that. So you need a mixture of almost like an Uber system. You need a mixture of being able to dial up, preferably the electric car, and it is available to you. Mainly, I would argue, expand the whole work of Local Link into that area, but that requires a budget. But we're going to have to change that. We're going to have smaller bus routes from village to village rather than, you know, big buses going around with not enough members or not enough members of the public on it. So it's a complete reformation logistically of the transport system in rural areas. If you take the Midlands, you know, we have the town system which seems to work, but it works only on the routes it's designated. But there's a whole range of travel within the Midlands that you cannot access any kind of public transport system. And that also needs to be changed.
Hmm. But smaller vehicles creates another challenge, though, because you don't have economies of scale. And also you need more drivers, at least in the short term, until we've autonomous driving.
Yeah, well, even before autonomous driving, I think there, you know, I think Alan Kelly, once upon a time as minister, proposed a system which would have utilised the underemployment of some people who are in the farming world or in other, you know, so that they would be available to do the driving. But I think, you know, I would argue local authorities, certainly in the Midlands, could start coming together and trying to figure out how even that particular system that was proposed about 5 years ago could actually work, or why did it not work in the first place. But one way or another, we will never get any kind of public transport system going unless we start realising that rural areas have a different transport dynamic than the urban areas, and you can't impose an urban system on the rural system. And that's all we're asking. So it means it needs to be passenger led. You can't, you know, it isn't economic to have buses running with two or three people from A to B, and when other systems could be employed instead.
Seamus, we must leave it there. I appreciate your time and thank you for taking the call.
Thank you very much.
Seamus Boland is Chief Executive of Irish Rural Link. And one of the recurring themes on text here is, sure, I'll buy the electric car, but where's the grant? And how much will the grant cover? And at the moment, electric cars tend to carry a premium, a price premium, over the petrol or diesel equivalent. And there you go. You've got from now until 2030 to make the adjustment. That's going to cause a lot of expense. And how much will you have to pay? How much will the government pick up the tab for? Ultimately, it all comes out of your pocket because government money is your money. It's taxation. But farmers, they're the ones who are reacting strongest from yesterday's announcement, the various targets for each sector.
agriculture facing a 25% cut in greenhouse emissions. How might that be achieved? Farmers say they had a plan to get to 22. How difficult will the extra 3% be? Oh gosh, there was a really nasty crash on the motorway between Athlone and Ballinasloe yesterday. There are some photographs in the morning papers and you see debris scattered far and wide. And one person was taken to hospital. The road is back open, but it is a scary, scary picture. Also, you know how hotel prices in our top tourist spots are ridiculously high at the moment? Well, this could be the answer. They're being booked up by celebrities who can well afford the prices, because first you had George Clooney declare he's coming to Laois this summer. Now, Donald Trump wants to come as well. Not to Laois, by the way, but he's due to visit Doonbeg in County Clare in August to play golf. I suppose it's his hotel. They won't be charging him the prices they charge everybody else. Anyway, still to discuss this morning. We look ahead to the Laois ladies and their big day out in Croke Park and preview the All-Ireland final. A roundup of everything you can look forward to across the Midlands over the bank holiday weekend. And where does Sinn Féin stand on cutting carbon emissions between now and 2030? Well, Brian Stanley was its environment spokesperson in the last Dáil. He'll be here after 11 to explain their position. But first, the Minister for Agriculture says he sees the national herd remaining stable over the coming years, and a major talking point in the carbon emissions debate was whether there would need to be a reduction in the total number of cattle in the state. The minister says he wouldn't commit to cutting the herd. Instead, Charlie McConlogue says farmers can reduce emissions through other means.
No farmer will be required to cut his herd or forced to cut his herd. We're encouraging farmers to do more forestry, and I think we will see more forestry done over the years ahead. Also, we'll be encouraging farmers to do biomethane production, which will see land used where farmers take up that option to generate new income streams.
Now, the range that had been set out in the action plan was between 22 and 30%. We spoke with the Irish Farmers Association last week and they felt getting to 22 was difficult but possible. Pat O'Toole is here. He's news correspondent with the Irish Farmers Journal. Pat, good morning.
Morning.
How difficult will the extra 3% be to get to 25?
Difficult. Absolutely. We'll only know in hindsight. At the outset, I'm going to say I think farmers will hit their target. There are six targets, and actually farmers are central to all six, but they are primarily responsible for two of them, because there's also the land use change and forestry sector, which is a very high target, between 37 and 58%. And the government don't know how they're going to. They're still measuring. They're still measuring exactly the amount of carbon being absorbed or released by our soils and by our forestry and our grassland and our cropping land. And so it's going to be 18 months before we know how that picture fixes. But obviously farmers are central to that. But we commissioned a KPMG report, the Farmers Journal did, last year, just before the announcement of the sectoral bans. And because no one else was sharing any research on the impact that sectoral reduction is going to have on farming, and it painted a pretty grim picture of 30%. 22% would have meant cuts that you could say, you know, 6% cut in the dairy herd, 8% cut in the beef herd, if memory serves. But you're talking about deep cuts to get to 30%, and obviously 25% is somewhere in the middle. So when we look at those figures, we realise that it's going to be a big ask. And I think we have to put context on what Minister McConlogue said there in the clip she played. For an individual farmer, any reduction will be voluntary. But I think we can dismiss the previous government commitments around a stable national herd. There's going to have to be a cut in cow numbers. We cannot get to 25 any other way. That's just the reality. But it will be voluntary on an individual farmer basis. It will be incentivised, and the hope will be that, you know, young expanding farmers won't be have to face swingeing cuts to recent, especially dairy expansion, which was done at the behest of a government plan, and that the cuts will be voluntary, and that they will offer perhaps a way to transition away from dairy or suckler farming for older farmers who may go, as Charlie McConnell said, to biogas, where the grass would become feedstock for an anaerobic digestion unit, which would help to solve the problems for the transport and energy sectors. But none of this is going to be simple, and there's no clear roadmap in place at the moment.
But if a farmer invested heavily in dairying and, let's say, spent €1 million and borrowed €1 million to upgrade equipment and buildings, and there was a business plan for that, assuming a certain number of cattle, and therefore they cannot reduce, will they have to do something else instead to offset their carbon?
Possibly. And again, anaerobic digestion could be part of the solution there, where the methane that the cows produce when they're in inside, that is, instead of being spread back out in as a nutrient onto the soil. And remember, when we're spreading for slurry now and farmyard manure, the old splash plate that showed up in the sky and meant the neighbours had to close the windows and take in the washing, that's becoming a thing of the past. On dairy farms now, it is a thing of the past. You have to use an injection system or a dribble system, a dribble bar system, which means that the slurry is going straight into the ground and there's much less release into the atmosphere. But that said, in terms of instead of the slurry going out on the land, the slurry will be converted into digestate, which is a solid powder, and that the gas will be trapped, and it will be converted into energy. So it could be helped to generate electricity or used as a fuel source for transport. So that's a very successful model in terms of it uses a lot of land, but it's a very successful model in the likes of Germany and Poland. An awful lot of buses run on gas coming from anaerobic digester units on farms. So, you know, there are things we can do to transition. I think it's a time for calm heads. Now that we've had a huge battle over the targets, and farmers are very good at putting their case forward, and there's been some very divisive debates between farmers and, in some cases, environmental activists who are saying things like farmers need to reduce their carbon footprint, and in other cases, environmental activists who are saying that animal farming is in itself something that has to go, that we have to end animal farming, and that we need to transition to other forms of food production. I don't think that that's a generally held view yet. I think that most people still believe that we can reduce our carbon footprint, we can farm sustainably, and we can reach our target by the end of the decade while maintaining livestock farming in this country, because livestock farming is the bedrock of Irish agriculture.
A farmer has asked a question just in response to something you said earlier, that let's say a dairy farmer might build an anaerobic digester to offset some of their carbon. Who will pay for that? Will they have to come up with the funds themselves, and what might be the business model for it, or would there be grant support?
Yeah, there will be support. There hasn't been enough support, but more crucially, it's about the refit tariff, and that's going to come the way of the producer of renewable energy, and the same for solar, the same for wind. There's been two issues, huge issues with renewable energy on farms and in general in Ireland. And you can throw forestry in here as well as a timber source for fuel, or also for, which is more important as we move away from using peat, but also as a building material. Planning has been a huge issue. And we have hundreds of solar, large-scale solar farm planning applications sitting gathering dust in offices, county council offices around the country. Anaerobic digestion, the other big problem apart from planning is the refit tariff. So that's what you're paid for your electricity, the renewable electricity that you generate. And it's been much lower in the Republic than it was in Northern Ireland until and across the UK. and we need to address that. But where things are coming the way of renewable energy, of course, is the huge increase in fossil fuel energy costs since the Russian invasion of the Ukraine, which has transformed the economics of energy production. It's also transformed the economics of farming. Fertilizer has trebled in price in less than 2 years. Fuel has doubled in price, and the cost of using artificial inputs in farming means that we have to be really mindful of the unit efficiency, if you like, of how much we use. How can we cut back by 20% and maintain production at 95% of current levels on a dairy farm or a tillage farm? What are the most efficient ways of using nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium? And we're learning because we have to. And that will provide efficiencies as well, and it may curb future dairy expansion by itself. Even if there was no plan in place, it has changed the economics of food production. And so there's an awful lot happening at the moment at the same time. It's very confusing for farmers. They're angry. They're afraid. We also had huge changes in support payments last year in a transformative CAP package, which has taken a lot of money from more intensive, larger farms and put it onto less intensive, more extensive production. Again, you know, it's a complicated picture, and farmers need guidance.
Yeah, they'll feel aggrieved if they're left to work it all out themselves. So how much support can they expect from the Department of Agriculture, Chagask, the other state bodies?
Chagask are central, because as a research agency, you know, we have to, we have a short amount of time, we have a huge target, and we need to do things that will be effective and effective quickly. So there's a lot of work going on farms at the moment, and some of it's proving very effective in terms of what can be done. Chagas could already put the marginal abatement curve in place, which is how we can get to 18% without cutting production. Things like the low emission slurry spreading I mentioned earlier, moving from urea to protected urea, two forms of chemical fertilizer, but one less impactful on the environment than the other. But once you get past 18%, you are into uncharted territory. Production cuts are expected, but Chagask are working really hard on, there's 100 signpost farms around the country, and they are models, I suppose, with hothoused on their commercial farms, but a lot of advisors in, looking very deeply at the system of farming and that the effect on the natural world of that farming, because this is the other thing to complicate it. It's not just about reducing our carbon footprint. We also have to be very mindful of biodiversity, the farm's interaction with the natural world, soil quality, water quality, and all these things have to happen at the same time, while maintaining an income to keep the farm going and to put food on the table for a family across 130,000 families in this country.
Well, a lot to take in, and not a very long lead-in time to get it all done. And we're talking about transport emissions having to be cut by 75%. And there's also some unallocated reductions. Apparently, they're hoping technology advancements over the next 7 years may provide some opportunities to assign those. What happens if we don't do this? And I'm not talking from a planetary point of view, but from a fines and consequences viewpoint.
Well, I think we can contrast two sectors. We look at the buildings target, but I'd say builders aren't a bit worried about these targets, because we've just seen yesterday where the government is going to pick up the tab for the mess of the, in terms of apartments which weren't properly built during the boom years, and which now need a huge amount of work to make them fire safe, and the builders are who built them are getting off scot-free. And ironically, if you were building a farm building at the time, there was very close scrutiny by the Department of Agriculture. It had to be built to very specific requirements, and there were grants in place, but you didn't get a penny of that grant unless every single I was dotted, and the building requirements and the regulations were very strictly enforced. So we actually had a higher standard of animal housing than human housing in this country because of the the Department of Agriculture's oversight over ag buildings. But I don't think builders are too worried about hitting or missing their targets, and I don't know what the consequences will be. And anyway, they will always be passed on. Builders will retain their margin and pass the costs on to the house buyer. But for farmers, it's very different because of the nature of food production, where the cap is 60 years old now this week, believe it or not, and we have a 64-page special in our paper commemorating that fact. But one of the founding principles was a Europe that had known hunger and starvation post-World War I and II didn't want to have that to happen again. So a system of subsidised food production to ensure cheap, affordable food, a guaranteed supply of it for the European consumer, was born, and that's the cap. And it's been a very effective model for both sides. But it means that if farmers fail to hit their targets, there's a big stick in the corner, and that's the direct payments. So we are vulnerable in a way that other sectors aren't, to be hit directly. Because what Eamon Ryan has said, he said individuals don't need to worry, but that the line minister will see their budget cut. But of course, if the Minister for Agriculture is cut, it doesn't mean he'll have to remortgage his house. It means the farmers' payments will be cut.
Pat O'Toole, appreciate your time. You can read more in the Irish Farmers Journal. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
It's 25 past 10. You want to get your comment on the air. 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103. And every contribution, by the way, qualifies for our Caller of the Day draw. And today we are giving you a chance to win a fantastic taste of Laois, with thanks to the Charter Bar and Eatery in the Midlands Park Hotel, the Cedar Rooms Bar and Restaurant in the Collession Hotel, the Grain and Grill Bar and Restaurant in the Maldron, and O'Gorman's of Kilminchy and the Bog Road, all in Port Laois. So you don't necessarily have to comment on farm emissions. It could be hospital car parking. It could be any of the topics the Friday panel shall discuss a little later. Or maybe you just want to wish the best of luck to the Laois ladies in their All-Ireland final, which we shall preview in a few minutes. A little earlier, we heard from Derek Conlon from Athlone, who has spent the last 2 weeks in Portiuncla Hospital in Ballinasloe. He drove there himself, not expecting to be kept in. However, the parking charges are racking up at €9 a day, and he was wondering, is there no leniency for patients? Well, Greg in County Meath, listening online. Morning, Greg. My understanding, he says, is that car park companies buy up the land in hospitals and other locations and run it as their business, so the previous owners have no input into the running of the car parks or indeed the price fixing. In the case, hospitals should have an agreement for the payment rate for patients that should be in the sale, but it may not have been the case for Portiuncla. Right. We will query it with the HSE, because you are a HSE patient, ultimately, if you go into a hospital, and you would imagine they would at least exert some pressure on your behalf, rather than you having to worry about the parking meter as well as your health while you're lying in a bed. Just doesn't seem right. Anyway, we are at the Friday of a bank holiday weekend. Hopefully a sunny one. But let's find out what Cathal Nolan has in store for us from Ireland's Weather Channel. Good morning, Cathal.
A very good morning, Will.
Tell us the sun will split the stones. Lie if you have to.
A glorious weekend ahead, Will. Unfortunately, I wish that's what I could present. It's not to be the case, unfortunately. Over the course of the weekend, we probably will see a good deal of inclement conditions. When I say inclement, I certainly don't mean a washout. Over the weekend, we're likely to see, I suppose, cloudy conditions predominate from time to time. It won't be a case that we'll see heavy rain throughout the weekend. There will be one or two periods in time where we see, I suppose, decaying weather fronts lying across the country. Not enough to bring heavy rain, certainly enough to bring some pitiful showers at times around the Atlantic coastal counties. And I suppose at other stages as well, military parts of the Midlands, misty conditions expected. It won't be all bad news. There will be some drier interludes. There will be some drier slots. Certainly Sunday looks like one of the better days over the bank holiday weekend. So if you have outdoor activities planned, probably Sunday is going to be the best day to do that. But overall,
well, I'm thinking that's the vintage parade in Birr for one. I know Stradbally Steam Rally is happening this weekend. Of course, the launch of the FLA, the first day, is Sunday. And Burr Air Display is on Monday. That's one where, again, fine weather is preferable. How does Monday look?
Monday's not looking ideal in the sense that there is a low pressure expected to pass close enough by the northwest of the country that its associated rain fronts are expected to cross the country during Monday. So that'll bring, I suppose, an increased risk of some precipitation at that stage. Will be a weak weather front passing through, probably around about the middle of the day, and then clear off as we get into the afternoon and evening. So certainly not ideal conditions for the Borough Air Display, unfortunately, this particular time around. The fortune, I suppose, in other years, not so on this particular occasion. It does look like predominantly overcast conditions on Monday.
If I can ask you to stretch your gaze a little further, the FLA continues from one Sunday to the following Sunday. Does the latter part of next week improve?
Well, certainly that is the caveat that comes with this particular forecast. It is that as we go through the week next week, we will gradually, throughout the midweek, towards the end of the week, we will see high pressure start to build in from the southwest. The Azores High is expected to push back up across the country and across northwestern Europe. And with that, it will bring, I suppose, more settled conditions, return to sunny spells. And with that, as the wind switches into the south, the southeast, we'll start to see those temperatures increase again up into the mid-20s. That's based on the conditions that we can see at the moment and based on the latest forecast. But certainly all the models seem to indicate that we will see a return to summery conditions as we go into the following weekend.
Okay, fingers crossed we get some sunny spells over this weekend for all that's happening. And Cathal, as always, thank you very much.
Pleasure as always, Will.